Welcome to the Waffle Shop podcast with me, Taylor James. This is the podcast that gets people waffling about their mental health, coping mechanisms, life's minor inconveniences, and the music that soundtracks it all. So join me as I open up shop and have a waffle.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The thought came into my head that I can't leave my mum widowed and sonless. And I thought, well, if I can't do that, then I've got to do something.
Welcome to another episode of the Waffle Shop podcast. It's another special one because it's face-to-face in the brand new studio. And I'm joined by male transformation coach, that's not even a word, coach and author, Ollie Pegg. Welcome to the Waffle Shop.
Thank you for having me. It's been nice to come and drive down to this new studio and get to see what you're doing. So,
to be fair, I need to say thank you for that because, one, I get very like, oh my God, someone wants to talk to me, and the fact that people have travelled to come and see me and have a waffle, it's quite special.
Yeah, no, it is really nice, and it's really nice what you've done with yourself. And we just had a little quick chat before we started, and I've been watching you through when you started, and I think you had a couple hundred followers when I started following you. So I've just sat here and just gone, right, this is what consistently turning up does.
But you know what, saying that though, some of those days when I feel like throwing in the towel, I get that from your posts.
Yeah.
And like your kind of like your rawness, like those kind of like, there's not many people that capture my attention when they do those, like, you know, like those face to like camera videos. But for some reason, like, I listen to you. So it's like those days when I'm like, oh, I can't be arsed. And it's like, get up. Get up and do something. You're like, yes, okay, I can do it.
Well, yeah. Some days are difficult. And some days you need to have the softly, gently approach. And some days you need just...
the kick up the arse.
Get up to it, yeah. And this morning I was with my fiance and I was like, I've got to go and do another talk about myself. And... and I was like, but come on, big boy. Like, this is what you need to
there's worse things to talk about. So.
Yeah, I've got to talk about my favourite subject, which is me.
It's a quaggy way to start. But I do start each one of my shows with something called the Weekly Waffle, which, quite frankly, it gets on my nerves. But once I've spoken about it, it makes me feel that little tiny bit better. I don't know what, I need to think of a new segment, really, for the start of the show. But once I've spoken about it, it supposedly makes me feel better. And the thing that's really winds me up is, you know, when you're in a really bad mood, or you're on the edge of a bad mood. You're not quite in a bad mood, but you're not in the good mood either. And you get caught on the door handle. It never happens when you're in a good mood. It is always when you're in a bad mood or just on that tiny little kind of edge of good and bad mood.
What are you catching on the door handle?
Like your sleeve or something. Yeah, I probably should have explained that. It's like my feet. Yeah. No, like your jumper or like your t-shirt or like your elbow. Yeah. And it's just like, I don't know if it ever happens when you're in a good mood.
Yeah, but do you think that process is, you're away, you're out the door, you get caught, you're in a frustrated, bad mood, you get caught on the door handle, then you got to turn around and go, ah, that's something telling me that I need to slow down and be more present.
Oh, see, this is why this is a good segment. This is why I can't let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. See, this is the thing. Like, when I talk about these things, it turns out I'm the problem.
Well, I mean, most of our problems are our own.
Yeah.
So we are, like, I could talk about, like, every person's problem is a perception of their internal thought process.
Wow. Okay.
So if it's like, this is why we react different to different situations and why people get strong views on politics while other people get strong views on football.
Yeah.
Because it's their priorities inside them. So the problem is always within the person.
Wow. See, I kind of want to ask you now, like, what winds you up?
What winds me up? Right. Before you said this, before we did the show, you were like, right, I do the segment. I was like, I know, yeah, it's about wind up. I've got a suitcase full. Right. So I was there. I was in the moment. I was like, right, I'm currently training for a triathlon.
Amazing.
I've just got a road bike and I hate cyclists. Like arrogant cyclists that wear the full Lycra gear and they take up all the road and they think the road is theirs and everything like that. So I've now got myself a bike and I've got myself some Lycra and I've done two training bike rides.
Yeah.
And I've realized that you can be a nice cyclist.
You hear that?
So
you can be a nice cyclist.
When you're going around a like country bend and you can see ahead of the car, you can wave them past.
Yeah.
And when you're at a roundabout, you can go all the way around the roundabout so they can take the inside lane and they appreciate it and stuff like that. So now, even more than ever, when I see an arrogant cyclist cycling on the road, I'm like, you don't have to do that.
It's like one of those things, isn't it? Like when you smile at old people just to let them know you're one of the good ones.
Yeah.
It's like you're now that, but in the cyclist version.
Yeah, I've been a cyclist. I know that you don't have to be like that, but yet you're still being like that. And so that winds me up. And then something happened yesterday morning. On my morning routine, I go and do a video for social media, as you see, and I then go and get a coffee. And I was in a coffee shop. Do we name drop places?
Yeah.
I was in a Nero coffee shop.
Oh, because it's trash.
It's the only coffee shop where I live that opens before 8 o'clock, which I think is outrageous.
What?
Yeah. So it opens at 7:30, so that's a good time for me. But there's normally two baristas behind there, and there was only one, and it was a bit busy. And this girl, she's a young girl, she looked like she was really struggling with the queue. And this woman came in and she goes, I've ordered through the app. Where's my coffee? And she goes, I'm too busy.
Yeah.
Like, I've not had a chance to look at
the online orders.
My work colleagues rang in sick. And this woman was like outraged that her coffee through the app wasn't ready. So now I've got a fucking knitting my hat about blooming why people buy coffees on apps.
Like, they just don't want human interaction whatsoever. Yeah.
When one of the perfect joys is watching someone prepare a coffee and like getting the milk ready and pouring it in. I was like, you're now doing that on an app.
It's like, this is, I'm going to like flip it on its head and go deep. Like what you did with my waffle is that it's the kind of instant gratification, isn't it? Like everybody wants everything now or yesterday, and there's no patience.
Amazon anymore. Prime mentality.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite a lot of the biggest thing that came from the pandemic was that kind of instant, like, I want it now.
Yeah. But there's apps are good for certain situations. Yeah. Buying coffee is not a place. Prove me wrong.
Get in touch. Let's dive into like your journey then. So obviously we've connected quite a lot on social media, and like I said before, like I love like your message and stuff, and like you pack a punch, and you can tell it comes from a place of experience and like just not wanting other people to feel the same way that you did, kind of thing, or the way that you do. How did this kind of journey start for you to get to the stage you are now?
So right now, I coach men in lifestyle transformation, normally getting a handle on their mental health and aligning it with their physical health. But I suppose my journey in transformation started just over 3.5 years ago. I was 30 years old and I realized that I had a problem with alcohol. And when I say I had a problem with alcohol, it wasn't I was having too many sherries on Christmas Day or anything like that. It was destructive. I'd lost driving licenses. I'd been arrested a couple of times. I'd had been in toxic relationships all the way through my 20s. And I've never really been able to drink alcohol responsibly and moderately or anything like that. And it came to a head. And I was at a suicidal place, and I knew that I had to do something about it. And so in the November of 2019, I went and joined a 12-step fellowship.
Incredible.
And it still gives me goosebumps now because like I remember the sorry state I was in, and like to compare my life to now than what it was back then, it's like a life beyond my wildest dreams that I never even like would ever think of happening. Like, oh yeah, let's just hook up and do a podcast. I'm just like, yeah, whatever. And not only that, to come in and just be like, yeah, whatever goes.
Yeah.
Like before, I had to control every situation. I used to need to know where all my fixes were. I need to manipulate people to get them to do what I want them to do and all things like that.
So like, there's an element of freedom now that has come with this journey.
Total. And, you know, I went into alcohol recovery thinking I just had a problem with drinking, and I needed to, don't get me wrong, stopping drinking completely changed my life for the better. But after a couple of months, I realized that alcohol was my medicine, that I was self-distributing to myself. So I didn't feel anxiety, I didn't feel emotional pain, I just blacked it out and escaped through alcohol. And what really opened my eyes was that they say, where I go, they say a very, very common saying is when you stop drink, the good thing about stopping drinking is you get your emotions back. The bad thing about stopping drinking is you get your emotions back, because you've got to feel them all, and you've got to process them in a way that isn't destructive. And the more and more that I go into sobriety through my 12-step program, the more and more I've realized how emotionally unmanageable a lot of other people, especially men, are, because we, especially in when we were being brought up, we were brought up into not showing that much emotion, not opening up. You put on this hard exterior and you just go through life. And, you know, I never thought I was an alcoholic, because I used to have material things around me. I used to have money in the bank. I used to have a job. I've never been unemployed. I was on the dole once when I was 18 for 2 weeks, and that was my choice, but I soon got a job. And all these things was like, I didn't drink every day, and people would expect an alcoholic to drink every day. And I never had that. I just went
it's
on a
It's weird
binge.
With that, isn't it? With like, there's even a stigma around what an alcoholic looks like.
Yeah.
Not looks like, but like kind of like all the aspects of it. Like, you would expect an alcoholic to drink every day. So it's quite, to be fair, well, thank you obviously for sharing it to start off with. But it's really interesting to hear, because my view of an alcoholic would be like someone who drinks every day and like doesn't look after themselves. Whereas it sounds like, you know, you were still working, you had, you know, all the good things that any functioning person has, but it was still that kind of crutch.
Yeah. So I was like, I was fit and healthy when I was drinking. You know, I used to go gym Monday to Friday, but as soon as Friday afternoon comes, I was out on the session. And while I was drinking, I did amazing things. I represented Great Britain in dragon boating.
Wow.
I walked the Camino de Santiago pilgrimage across Spain. Like, I was still drinking, but I was using, like, at the end of the training sessions in the dragon boating and stuff like that, I was using drink as my escape of the emotions.
Yeah.
And, you know, I used to beat myself up because I wasn't as quick as the top person in the team. Yeah. So I just used to drink on that. And, you know, you get, you see it a lot in footballers. They finish football and then they're hitting the bottle. Mm. Or when they're in, like, Gazza's, the perfect kind of Paul Gascoigne, if no one's a footballer, is a perfect kind of demographic of that. But all those things, me completing all those things, also told me when I was in the depths that I'm not an alcoholic because I've done all those things.
Well, I guess there was quite a lot of, like you said, like these things that are like bucket list things for like some people. There's obviously a lot of highs that are attached to that. Well, I can't possibly be an alcoholic because I'm functioning at this rate that I'm like doing these incredible hikes. I'm doing these like pilgrimages, like, you know, I'm racing.
Yeah,
that's powerful.
Yeah,
but like not necessarily.
And that's where the alcohol came in, because I had these massive highs. I mean, I got the bronze when I was dragon boat racing for Great Britain. We had the European Championships in Rome. Wow. We went out there. The team got a bronze medal, and then it was the after party and ceremony. I can't remember the after party because I was just that blackout drunk.
Wow. How many years have you been sober now?
I've been sober 3 years, 8 months. So, and, you know, in that time in sobriety, one thing that I made sure that I kept on top of very early on was my fitness.
Yeah.
Because I saw, like, when I was doing the pilgrimage in my past, when I was doing the dragon boating, when I was training for runs and everything, when I was drinking, it helped me digest and process a lot of things internally.
Yeah.
So, like, since I've been sober, I've run marathons, I've done ultra marathons. I'm now training for a triathlon. Eventually, I think I'm going to do an Ironman.
Yeah.
It's finding time for it. Because I've got so much things happening in my life now, and building a coaching platform where I can help men, and writing a book that still hasn't got a title. but that book then goes into the not spoken about things that kind of happening in recovery of alcoholism. It's more of kind of a journey of where I'm at, that book. And so far it's going to touch on things like the loneliness you feel when your friendship groups change, and the isolation part of that you go through. And then, you know, I'm engaged now, which is the best thing that's ever happened in my life and sobriety. And, but going into a new relationship, sober dating, sober sex, all the feelings that get entailed in that, that is just...
Was there a part of you that felt like you couldn't function unless there was alcohol involved when it came to those kind of, I guess, I don't want to say basic emotions because I don't think any emotion is basic, but kind of like the relationship, the dating, sex, like... that you felt like you needed alcohol to kind of get through that.
Dutch courage. And I think it's so ingrained in our society that you go for a couple of drinks on a date and get to know someone over a couple of drinks.
Yeah.
And like, and that's the way I thought that you met people. And like when I met my partner now, we went on walks and we did it the traditional way.
Yeah.
And things happened within me in that, because we were doing everything properly, and I'd just been celibate for a period of time because like I needed it to work on myself. And we went on a walking date, and then I think third date in, I held a hand for the first time, and I was like, this is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
And then I'll tell you a story. I think it was the third date after I held her hand. She dropped me back home because I'd lost my driving license at this point. I was still paying the fine and the ban. And I knew she wanted to kiss me and I wanted to kiss her, but I bottled it because I was nervous, because it was new, because I'd never felt all these strong connection emotions to someone. And I darted out the car and I was like, what the fuck? like, if this is being sober, I don't know if I want to be sober. Like, I'm ringing my friends that are in recovery. I'm like, what is this doing to me? Like, I used to be a bit of a Jack the Lad with the girls. I used to be this Jack the Lad. I used to be confident, cocky, arrogant, be this dominant kind of male in a bar. And now I just can't even kiss a girl.
I'm shy. I imagine it kind of really destroys like a belief system that, like you said earlier on, has been ingrained in us from past generations on TV, movies. So I'm like, props to you, mate, because I can't imagine that would have been easy to break all that kind of belief system down.
No, and that's the thing. And it's the hardest thing that I ever did. For me, the hardest thing wasn't stopping drinking.
Yeah.
The hardest thing was staying stopped. Because I wasn't a daily drinker and I wasn't dependent on alcohol for my body functions, like stopping drinking, I knew that I could stop for a period of time, like a week or 2 weeks or something like that. But I used to get those urges where it's like, right, the fuck it button's coming. Yeah. And it would just be like, bang, right, Ollie's on a session. And what I needed to do early on in the first 4 or 5 months of my recovery was become very aware that that's what my tendencies were. And I used to let things build up, not sometimes consciously, sometimes unconsciously. And then they build up and it'll be like, the fuck it button's coming. But instead of pressing that, it's right, what do I need to do? What habits do I need to do? Where do I need to go? How can I get myself out of this fuck it button sensation in my head? And through time and patience and understanding and self-work and reflecting on all my life and everything like that, it's got to a stage now where I don't have an urge to ever really go and drink. Like, not drinking alcohol isn't a problem for me anymore. Living life on life's terms, that's still as it's come up into but it's getting better. And
is there as you're navigating life, and like, you know, there's always like weddings, christenings, like all these kind of like birthdays, does sobriety come with a level of peer pressure?
Well, it's funny you should say that. A couple of weeks ago I went on my first sober stag do. 12 lads. I was the only one that wasn't on the piss. Down in Newquay surfing, and then they all night out and everything like that. And I'd never put myself in that environment with my old friends where they're all on the session, as lads do. And I never put myself in that kind of environment. I was never kind of self-assured enough to do it before this stag do. And because there was surfing involved and everything like that, I thought, well, in the day, everyone's going to be surfing anyway, so I'll be all right then. It'll just be the night. So I was like, right, I'll go for it. And I was all a bit nervous before, as you would be, because lads are lads, and you play everything forward in your head before it actually happens. And I went on this stag do, and it was a Friday night, and they'd all been on the beers on the train on the way there and everything like that. And we sat at this bar. I was having my Coke. Everyone else was having a drink. And they're all just chatting in between themselves. I was chatting, and I just took like 5 minutes to look around and thought, Ollie, you're not that fucking important. Like, all these people that are like, oh, they're going to make me do that, they're going to make me do this, like the peer pressure, it's this inward self thing. Like, you think that they're going to do that to you, but really, a lot of the time, you're not that fucking important. And they couldn't give a shit that you're not drinking as long as they are.
I think that's probably the best answer that you could have done that. I feel like you can relate that to like pretty much every aspect of your life as well. I want to touch on the book because the reason why this is fresh in my mind is because I recently edited an episode of an artist who has just kind of released their album. And through the whole writing process, they didn't have a title for the album. They had all these notes, and they had all like the the song titles and stuff like that. And it wasn't until like very, very last minute they were like, ah, okay, that's the title. Mm. So it's kind of like, is there, now that you're writing the book, a similar theme of like, okay, because I imagine when you're kind of looking back and going over like the old ground and kind of with the emotions and how you were at that certain time, I imagine it branches off into a lot of different kind of spaces.
Yeah, and it branches off into, as I say, like sober sex, sober dating. And then it also, like, I didn't realize until I was, when I got to 2 years sober, I just celebrated my 2 years sober anniversary. We're away on holiday. It was our first holiday together with my partner, and we're away in Mexico. And I got back from there, and I suddenly started getting anxiety attacks, first time in my life. Wow. And I was there in my head thinking, like, I'm sober. Why am I feeling like this?
Yeah.
Like, I shouldn't be getting anxiety attacks now. I'm doing the work. And it's that whole life of going, all right, you've stopped one thing, but other, that doesn't mean something else isn't coming walking through the back door. And that kind of thing. So going through the book and kind of telling my story and saying what it was like and what early recovery was like and then things that come up, yeah, it's just, it could go on forever. Yeah. And that's the joy of it. And, you know, I started coaching, my coaching platform in 2020. And the only reason Ollie Peg Becoming You came up is because I was invited on a podcast. I've been posting for like a week and someone said, do you want to come on our podcast? It was in Canada. I was like, yeah. And I was sitting there. And I was like, how are people going to get in touch with me? I don't have a Facebook page. I don't have a company name. I don't have anything. Like, I was like, right, what do I do? And I thought, and you couldn't go to the gym then. So I was like, right,
went. Yeah, lockdown. Yeah. Just big year.
Yeah. So I went to the shed, started doing some sit-ups and pull-ups and started doing some dumbbell curls. And I was like, I need a name. Within about a minute of just going, right, just have a bit of space. Ollie Peg Becoming You, becoming the real honest you. I was like, bingo.
Yeah.
Went in 20 minutes before that podcast. I was like, how can I contact you? Well, my Facebook page.
Straight in there.
So with the title of the book, I'm hoping that either a title's going to come up while I'm writing it,
yeah,
or I'll just have to work out for like 20 minutes when I finished it and go, that's the title of the book, and just stick with that. So. But I think something will come to me. I don't know.
Of course it will. I mean, look what, like, kind of like you've overcome already. And it's like, even like with the Instagram handles and like the business name and stuff, like, I think it'll be when you least expect it with, yeah, that kind of thing. They'll be like, it'll all kind of make.
Yeah, but sense. I don't want some like corny shit, like no. The Journey Through Sobriety by Ollie Peg or something like that. It's going to be something.
In that voice.
Yeah. It's going to be something that relates to me, like, Budgie Smuggler, yeah, Warrior or something like that.
This was a topic of conversation. It's like, have you always been a budgie smuggler? I don't know where I was going with that. Wearer. Obviously, for anyone who doesn't know, they should know what they budgie smugglers are.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Essentially Speedos,
yeah,
I guess. It's just, yeah, always been a fan of the budgie smuggler.
I wasn't.
I don't even think that was a question.
It's something I took on in sobriety, and I thought, if I'm confident to wear a pair of budgie, yeah, smugglers as a man, then I've got pretty high levels, yeah, of confidence. And then me and my friend, we went to Tenerife, and we were walking down the like near the beach in Tenerife. And he goes, women don't have a problem with this, do they? I was like, what's that? He goes, it's the men. And it's when you're wearing budgie smugglers, it's the other men's eyes that look at you and go, what a prick.
Yeah.
And the reason they're saying what a prick is because what a prick is what I can't do.
Yeah.
I don't have the confidence.
That's so true. Because it is that kind of, and to be fair, you can apply this to like so many different avenues and aspects of your life, but people are so quick to judge. And 9 times out of 10, it's because you're doing something that they wish they could.
Because they're the problem.
Yeah.
Like yeah. Said at the start.
Start.
Yeah.
God. You're good at this, aren't you?
Well, I should make a career out of it.
how important is it for you then? Because obviously, you've done the sobriety thing, the alcohol, like the mental health. How important is it for you now to help others?
So from early on, as well as working the 12-step recovery program that I work daily, I think I got to about 7 months sober, and I thought, right, there's as much as this program's helped me, that there's other avenues that I need to kind of go down. So I started doing life coaching courses and working my way up, and I mainly started coaching fitness and nutrition and stuff like that. So I did a lot of fitness coaches, mentorships and everything like that as well. And one thing that came out of one of the coaches is Paul Mort, if you know Paul Mort.
Yes,
is,
yeah, he's been on the podcast.
Has he?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I must still remember that podcast, actually. The reason why it's so prolific for me is because I'd been away somewhere and I didn't take sun cream. And I literally look like a completely different person. So, yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, so I was doing one of his coaching courses and it kind of really emphasized what your values are as a person. And I was like, whoa. Like the majority one that came back is kind of the reason I learn so much is so I pass it on.
Yeah.
Like you get different kind of people and some people learn for themselves and just like to be knowledgeable. And then some people learn to pass it on. And one of my things is the reason I learn, the reason I listen to podcasts, the reason I do coaching courses, the reason why I just immerse myself in as much knowledge as I can, read books, all that kind of thing is because, you know, I do all different coaching courses and then I put it together in my head and I think, right, that looks really good. But I don't reinvent the wheel when I coach. Yeah. I just done a lot of different research and a lot of different courses where I've just gone, that's a nice bit, that's a nice bit, that's a nice bit, that's a nice bit. That's my coaching program done.
But then that's life though as well, isn't it? Because it's like, it's not a one size fits all. So if you're pulling from like past experiences and stuff that you know, like makes a difference and know how impactful it can be. Like it's almost like you build in like a Lego house and these kind of foundations to allow someone to be like the strongest version of themselves, the best version of themselves. So it's like, I think it's probably the best way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And the way I learn the best is not by listening to one person and just follow that one person. I learn the best from listening to all different people and putting what works for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get some people that sign up to coaching programs for years and years and years and have that same mentor that they just learn off. Whereas for me, I need to do different loads of people, work with loads of people. And then like, it just because I finish one course doesn't mean I'm going to stop learning and that's my education done. It just means I'm waiting for another coach to come along that I like what he's got and think, right, I'm going to go and jump on you.
It's like self-development pick and mix.
Yeah. And when people come, like I've got a 3-month coaching program and I don't expect, if they want to carry on after that 3 months, then fair enough. But I put so much passion and energy into a 3-month coaching program that like, all right, you've learned as much as you can off me.
Yeah.
Go and find someone else.
One of the things that's quite topical at the moment in my life is this idea of change and how we have such like a negative look on people changing or things changing or, you know, whatever it might be. They might be like a, you know, fear of change and like the anxieties around it. Whereas I get a real sense from you, from obviously hearing like kind of like aspects of your journey, and even like what I can see like across your social channels, is that things need to change. Like, we're never going to kind of get to where we need to be, or we're not going to become who we are supposed to be or who we want to be if we don't change things. What's your kind of opinion on the like the whole change question?
It depends how happy you are.
Yeah.
Because if you're not happy and you don't change anything, then you're never going to be happy. Because I can't remember, there's a quote I should have researched.
That hit. That hit. Nothing, that did.
If nothing changes, nothing changes. So if you don't change anything, you're just going to carry on doing the same shit. So if you're willing to then start making changes, and I'm not talking like drastically change everything about your life in one massive go, because then you'll get overwhelmed, you'll get anxiety, it might not work, so you'll sink into depression, all those emotions, that's what happens. But if you implement like one small thing consistently, build on it, build on it, build on it, and just gradually keep doing small changes, then you're going to then develop into the person you want to do. Yeah. And not every day is going to allow you to make a change constantly. Like, it's not, you're going to have to still live life while you're making a change. Mm-hmm. So it's about how can you drip feed it in. And I think that's the biggest thing, is people just think, right, in my head, people could think, right, everything's going completely shit. Instead of just going, well, that area of my life's all right for now, that area of my life's all right for now, that area of my life's all right for now, this one is my most crucial part that I need to change. I can live with those three. I'll change that one, and then that'll generally lift the mood, and the other changes will be easier to do. But it's just a case of, right, everything's going wrong, I need to change everything completely. And that's that Amazon Prime mentality. That's instant gratification. I mean, I'm going to have, in 3 years' time, I'm going to have 3 years' worth of more knowledge. If I've not changed in a person with 3 years' more knowledge and understanding of what I'm doing and the craft and coaching and everything like that, then it's just not possible, is it?
No. It's almost like if I haven't changed in 3 years' time, I've done something wrong.
Yeah. Because life happens.
Yeah. How important, and because obviously one of the biggest things, I mentioned it before we started recording, that I take away from like your social channels and stuff like that, is the kind of the power of habits. You know, everyone has a bad habit. Like, regardless of who you are, that everyone has that one thing that kind of they probably shouldn't do because they know it doesn't like make them feel good, but we do it anyway. Like, I think it's a very human thing. From a coaching point of view, what advice would you give to someone on how to build a good habit?
Keep it in the day.
Oh, okay.
If you want a long, sustainable habit, don't think that I've got to do this habit for the rest of my life. Just, I need to do this today, maybe repeat it tomorrow if it's still working. And if it's still working, then repeat it the next day. And if I forgot it yesterday, I better double make sure that I do it today. But I think that's the issue, is like when it comes to like weight loss and diet and stuff like that. And I coached a lot around that. And the clients that I coached then were like, I need to lose 10 stone. And I was like, well, can we start with a pound?
Yeah.
And then once you get a pound, then just go, right, well, can we just repeat that? And it's that habit of going, I need to, well, say drinking, I need to stop drinking. I'm drinking every day. It's causing an effect. I need to stop drinking. So you think, right, I'm not going to drink for the rest of my life. I was like, well, how about just not drinking today? And then if that works, try it again tomorrow.
So the little wins.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm an advocate for celebrating little wins. And like, it's something that I got taught way early on in my recovery. And when we were, I used to speak to people about gratitude and wins, and in coaching courses I've done, it's another thing that's come up, like always celebrate your little wins. And And every night I write five things that I've done in the day. Because another podcast host, Chris Williamson, you've probably seen his video, where he talks about confidence is not shouting affirmations in the mirror. It's about creating that undeniable truth that you have in front of you and proof.
It's the facts. You can't argue with the facts.
So if I'm there going struggling, going, it's Sunday, and I'm like, oh, I've got another week to go. What did I do last week? I look back on my planner for the week, and I've got 21 wins or 30 wins. I'm going, well, quite successful, really. Let's carry on going.
Is that what drives you now? Because I imagine there's past versions of you that were almost screaming to kind of, I mean, look, I'm only saying this from personal experience, I'm kind of putting words into your mouth, but there's definitely been past versions of Taylor where I can look back on now and be like, it was like I could hear like an internal voice screaming kind of for help that I've just kind of ignored. But then there'd be days where, especially when I look back on my journal or when I'm, you know, doing like today's entry, for example, that I'm like, do you know what? At that point, I didn't think I was going to get through that. Whereas now I'm looking back at it and thinking, do you know what? Fair play.
Yeah. I don't really know what. I always have the fear of going backwards. I'm riddled with the fear of, like, I have a healthy fear about drinking.
Yeah.
And, like, I use that to my advantage more than everything. And I have a fear that I never want to go back to that place, similar to what you were saying. But, and I use that a lot. But my drive forward now is like, even though I suffer ridiculous amounts with imposter syndrome and fear of failure, but that's just my insecurities, and that's something that I carry on working on. My biggest drive now is like, I can't quite believe in 3.5 years how much my life's turned around, and I've got a lovely fiance and I've got very exciting things happening in the future, and she's told me not to say it, but we've had an offer accepted on a house and all that kind of things happening. And I don't know if I should have just not say that. But anyway, we've said
it. We can edit out. You know, it does the beauty of a podcast.
You can say we can edit out, but we're not going to edit that out. we've had an offer accepted on a house, and, you know, we've got, like, as hard as it is sometimes, just doing that trudge and going, like, right, just keep on going, keep on going. I'm looking at what I'm building. I've got, like, who knows what's going to happen in the future, but right now my main drive is to be this kind of equal partner in a relationship that communicates when he needs to do work on himself and can help her in her career and everything like that. And I think where I used a lot of my fear of failure before, it's now we have this relationship where our drive is to us as a unit moving forward. And it's kind of, it's only something that's really come out in the past 6 months or so where I've noticed it more and more, and my passion and my drive and my spearheadedness and my determination to go and keep on consistently turning up and everything like that is because I want to be the partner that she appreciates and values. I want, if I'm lucky enough in future to have kids or anything like that, I want to see that the dad's that's like, yeah, he had his shit times in life, but
now he didn't give up.
Yeah, now look at him. Like, yeah, he's a raging alcoholic, but he's sober now. Yeah. And now look at him and think of all the people you're helping. And
hey, mate, it's inspiring.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things that I'm taking from this, and we, from pretty much every conversation I have on this show, is that the pain became the purpose. And it almost kind of got to that stage where you hit rock bottom. But when we got to that rock bottom, the only way was up. Like, we didn't give up. We kept going. If there is someone listening to this now who may be at the rock bottom, what advice would you give them?
There's always further to go down.
Wow.
We can always say that we're at rock bottom. And I could, and I said I was at rock bottom. And then there's another rock bottom below it. So you can either sit at the rock bottom state, or it gets worse and worse and worse. And, you know, I like suicide and everything is like the lowest, like rock bottom kind of state. But even in suicide, and I hear people committing suicide, and I just think how brave, and even things like that, like,
yeah,
to be able to do that. Like, I, there was a time in my life where I didn't want to live, but I was too afraid of committing suicide.
Wow.
And I've, because I didn't have it in me to say, like, I'm gonna go and do it. And I to hear people that go off, that they committed suicide, instead of, you know, you get people going, oh, what a selfish prick, easy way out and everything like that. I'm thinking, what a brave ass motherfucker to do that.
You hear that, don't you, from like, I don't know, from like stories and like people who like talk about it like so openly, is that it's almost they become like the happiest versions of themselves once that decision has been made.
But to help someone out of the rock bottom state, what is the number one root cause of your problems? Mm. That's the first thing I'd ask them. If they say, Ollie, I'm at rock bottom, what can I do? I'll say, what is the number one root of your problems? Because until you identify your number one issue, and don't just be mamby-pamby and go, all life, because it's not all life. Yeah. It's the one thing, like for me, what's the number one thing that's affecting you? Well, it was drink. Right. Well, the first thing you do is you go and find support for drink. If it's, I don't know, anxiety or something like that. Well, it's the anxiety. Well, either talk to a coach that talks about anxiety, go to a doctor's, go and see support for the health condition. Is it anxious thinking or is it anxiety attacks? Like, you've got to really knit down and be specific. That's the C. Specific.
I didn't even I was literally clinging on to every word you were saying then.
You got to go into your root down and like shred away, like, right, what is that number one thing that I need to get a handle on right now that's going to improve my life the most? And then as soon as you get that and you know what it is, you've got something to work towards.
Mate, I think out of these face-to-face ones that I've done, I think this one is really kind of probably inspired me the most, because it's just proof that we can do anything. Like, the only thing we can't do is give up.
Yeah.
And I think you literally, if you were to put that in a dictionary with a face next to it, I think your face would be in the, not that you put pictures in the dictionary or whatever it is.
Could be the first face in the Oxford Dictionary. Now you're playing with my egomania, and I'm just sitting there thinking,
huh. No, but it's true. And you know what? I'm a huge champion for like anyone who goes through those kind of like the difficulties, and because it's so easy to kind of sit in the rock bottom or sit in that kind of mode of like, well, this is life, this is just the way it's going to be now forever. And there's something incredibly powerful in identifying those things and allowing yourself to see those things, regardless of what it is, as the problem, and going, like, actually, I deserve more than this. Like, I want more than this. And to challenge that. I know it's not difficult. I mean, no, it is difficult, and it's not easy, is what I'm trying to say. But it's just that kind of like that fire. And I think it's so inspiring that I'm grateful to even have that kind of conversation with someone, because that's what really turned things around for me. It was listening to someone else's journey and listening to like their struggle, and then not being that, well, this is it, like, I'm just going to settle for this now. Like, no, fuck that. Need more, want more. Like, and it's okay to, you know, go after these things.
What was
the turning point? If you don't mind, obviously, share.
Because it got to a point where I really, really wanted to commit suicide. And so my dad was 62 years old, and he died of a sudden heart attack in 2016. It was a couple of months after I got the bronze medal. And I'd been out on a normal weekend and I'd already been suicidal and things like that. And the turning point for me, I was lying in my piss and my sick in a bed for 48 hours. I was lying there and I was going to commit suicide. And then the thought came into my head that I can't leave my mum widowed and sonless. And I thought, well, if I can't do that, then I've got to do
something.
And that was, well, I was like, I can't drink. So that was it.
I have so much respect for you. Like, that can't have been easy to even go through, to let alone just say that out loud. Is there a point of you that thinks, you know what, you must feel proud?
I feel immensely proud, and I'm the world's worst at taking a compliment. Like, I just go all funny. Yeah. Like, because someone, and this is something that I still have to deal with, and people can pay me a compliment and in my head I go, yeah, but you don't know the real me.
Yeah.
And that's the mental health aspect that and the imposter syndrome and everything like that. Like, oh, that Ollie's a really nice guy. I was like, you didn't see me 5 years ago.
But at the same time, that version of Ollie from 5 years ago doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, but that's where I still
guess need, for yourself.
That's for me is where I still need to. Oh, that Ollie is doing really well. He's helping loads of people. I'm like, yeah.
I feel like I'm talking to a mirror. it's difficult to navigate, isn't it?
Taylor, top podcast host. Yeah, so, well,
Taylor's just left.
Yeah.
Just bored out of his own studio.
I need to get better. Something that I need to improve on is get better at accepting appraisals and get better at understanding how far I've come and everything like that. But I also have quite a big ego, if you didn't tell. It's something that I also have to keep in check with. So as much as I have to praise myself, I also can't pat myself on the back so hard that it breaks my own arm. Because I'm a 2 feet first kind of person. Yeah. If I'm praising myself, it's the highest order. And if I'm like going in on myself, it's also at the lowest order. It's no just like subtle, oh, well done, you did well there. It's like, you were fantastic. Like, I was getting the car to go back home. I was like, you basically, mate, who the bloody hell's the diary of the CEO? Yeah.
Like, diary of Ollie.
What is modern wisdom? Like, all that thing. And I'll be there doing that. And then suddenly I'll go, oh yeah, but you're just a fucking alcoholic. You're just fucking done this. And I'll just be then, for one extreme, no, suddenly it's like balance out of emotions. Yeah. It's just like highest high, lowest low. And then whatever goes up comes down, and then it'll balance out, and I'll just go back to the spin then.
Yeah. If there's anyone kind of listening who wants to know more about you, or even wants to obviously work with you from a coaching point of view, where can they find you?
So I'm all over Instagram and TikTok. And my handle is @Ollie_Peg. That's with a double G, and my Facebook page is Ollie Peg Becoming You. And if you go to the link in my bio on my Instagram or go on my Facebook page, then I also write really good daily emails every single day as another part of my habits. Sign on to them, and then I have loads of stuff going on in there as well.
Honestly, you have been probably up there one of the most inspirational people that I've spoken to. Purely just from a selfish kind of perspective, because I feel like there's certain aspects of like the mental health journey that I really kind of really feel from you. And I think that's why I listen to you when you do those kind of like videos and stuff. Thank you so much for joining me for a waffle.
Thank you. And it's been an absolute pleasure. And I'm glad that I didn't ask to come on your waffle when you were doing it online so I could come and experience your studio. I mean, I could have asked to come on here over the past 3 years, but I saw a proper studio.
Straight in there. Yeah, I'll wait.
That's a bit of me.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You've been listening to the Waffle Shop podcast with me, Taylor James. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and even leave a review. It means the world to me. See you soon.